Welcome to Inside Out, the Naked Truth. Tonight we are coming to you live from our home at Lupin Lodge in the Los Gatos Hills of California, where clothing is optional, but the truth is always naked. I am Rochelle Alicia Strider.
And I am Errol Strider.
Errol and I spend a great deal of our time uncovering our truth from the beliefs and perceptions we have been given by family, friends, institutions, and of course, the media. I mean, nudity is not just skin deep. We invite you into our conversation and exploration of these naked truths.
Ooh, it's kind of scary, but let me think about that. Hold on. Before we go any further, I want to tell you, we are so happy to be sponsored by Go Raw Foods. I mean, you couldn't ask for a better sponsor for something that's Naked Truth, Go Raw. And these are, like, so nutritious. I've been to the factory, I've shared this before, and I'm just amazed at how careful they are to preserve the nutrition in these and make them taste good. So you can go to Go Raw online or Go Raw at Whole Foods, Trader Joe's, or you come out and visit us and you can go raw in a matter of speaking. And we want to let you know that you can call in and join us any time you like, but it has to be between now and the end of our show. 888-627-6008. And I suspect tonight's going to be a rip-roaring...
Oh, God. Why do you just say things like that? The minute, remember how we bombed in Bellingham?
Wait,
thought we were supposed to be something. So if we're going to be rip-roaring, I have to think, I don't even know how to be rip-roaring.
So we're back to the responsibility thing again, Rochelle. Well, I thought we covered this last week and we'd...
No.
I was thinking today, I can't believe I am still run by patterns and traits that are, let's just say, less than effective, borderline. How could you still be doing that? But then I'm reminded, doesn't matter that I still have these reactions that I had when I was like six. and the other thing that I observed was the pettiness. Ooh, the pettiness I am prone to. And
well, I'm so glad you're finally seeing those things.
Rochelle was going, I've been putting that as a note on your dinner plate every night. You're petty, petty, petty.
I know, dear, but you say
that to all your husbands.
I think we all are. I think that's, you know, I was saying something to a person I work with. I said, I think we complain because we feel impotent. We feel we can't do anything. And so being able to complain gives us something to do. And I think pettiness and complaints, they seem to go hand in hand.
Really? Like twins, you know?
Yeah. I think they were born in the same womb.
Pettiness and complaints. Petty is like you get stuck on something that you make a big deal out of that's...
Very small.
Small. And you get very ego invested in it, like it needs to be that way. And when I get petty, I can feel myself actually contract. I feel like I become Silas Marner. Remember him?
I do. He was cheap.
He was so cheap, that guy. And for those
of
you...
He was a miser. I think that's where the first ever heard that word, when I was reading Silas Marner.
Yes. So we've established that I am Klutz Man, and I might go on record as saying I am Meister.
A Meister Miser.
Yeah, Meister Miser. I like that. Meister Miser. This is Meister Miser speaking to you. You want to talk cheap, skin flint? You know, picky, picky, picky. Come on, let's do some arm wrestling at this table. Call in. Let's hear how bad you are at that.
I know that the pettiness is like taking little tiny things and blowing them out of proportion and making them matter to you. Because you can't even see them when they're really small, but you blow them up and then you can see them real big, and then they matter because you've made them big.
But for me, it's like penny wise and pound foolish. That's where my Achilles heel is. Because, see, I can relate to like $6. It's in my pocket. I can count it. I can feel all six of the dollars.
Well, if you had $600 in your pocket and could count it.
Yeah, but I can't really do that with like large sums, even though.
What's anything over 10?
Right.
Well, he's taking my silliness beyond inflation.
Yeah, but speaking of that, I was at a church service years ago, and at the end of the service, the subject, curiously enough, was about money, donating money. And at the end of the service, the minister asked us to go inside and really get still and ask ourselves, how much really do we want to be able to give to this event today? And I went in there and I kind of felt $10. I could give $10 that day. And then he said, okay, what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to go inside and ask what God would have you give. So I went inside again and waited, and then I heard the voice. $11.95.
You did not.
Yeah, $11.95.
Now, I've heard this story before. I never heard $11.95.
It's always $11.95.
No, it never was. You made that one up.
Well, yes, I made
moment.
It up. I
but
made
you
up.
Made that. But it really happened. That experience happened. You just made up the numbers now.
Oh.
Didn't you?
No, that's what happened. No. Who's counting? Let's move on. We're expecting some significant amount of rain and wind, and, you know, we're sort of getting ready for it. And
yeah, it's like with people who live near hurricanes.
That's right. That's right. That is so right. So
where'd you go just now?
Well, where I went is getting ready for this song.
Hear how the wind begins to whisper. See how the leaves go streaming by. Smell how the velvet rain is falling out where the fields are warm and dry. Now is the time to run inside and stay. Now is the time to find a
gonna rain, I can see it. Soon it's gonna rain.
Whoops.
I can tell. Soon it's gonna rain. What are we gonna do? Soon it's gonna rain. I can feel it, soon it's gonna rain. I can tell, soon it's gonna rain. What'll we do with you? We'll find four limbs of a tree we'll build, four walls and a floor we'll bind it over with and duck inside to stay. Then we'll let it rain, we'll not feel it. Then we'll let it rain, rain pell-mell, and we'll not complain if if it never stops at all.
What show was that from?
It was from The Fantastics.
Oh, that's right.
That was from The Fantastics. It was the original cast album. And I have to say that The Fantastics, we've never really actually had this conversation, which is interesting. The Fantastics was really a fantastic part of my life. It was a very significant part of my life. The show... circumstances surrounding it, me, what happened in my life at that time.
And you were in it, weren't you?
Yes, I played one of the fathers.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to sing the song, "Why did the kids put beans in their ears? No one can hear with beans in their ears."
You're a father or a grandfather?
Exactly. You know, that's what's funny. When I played it, I was like 20. So I tried to project my voice like a guy who would be younger than I actually am now. But I'm so habituated to think in order to portray an older guy, actually younger than I am, I have to pick my voice up and turn it into some kind of voice like that. It's like a granddad. You know, it's
like a really old codger.
Well, an old codger. But I love that old codger. But I played the part and I got to sing that song, and there were so many aspects to it that were so meaningful to me. First of all, I think it was 1963 or 4. It could have been the very semester that I ended up being thrown out of college. Yes, that was one thing about it. I had some very good friends in the drama department and who were in it.
Errol was thrown out of college is a program unto itself.
Oh,
it's very long. It had nothing to do with his intelligence. He was just a naughty boy.
That's provocative. Speaking of the naughty boy, anyway, I'm just very grateful that I got to do that show. And it was a case, though, of the director just couldn't direct at all. She just was totally had the foggiest idea. And so the actors, we got together and we directed ourselves. We took over the direction of the show.
Oh, mutiny.
Mutiny, yes.
Mutiny in Fantastics.
In Columbia, Missouri.
Columbia, Missouri. Yeah.
So that was my little stint back then. And I think it was the week that Kennedy, it was the same month, year of Kennedy's assassination.
Good year for exploration.
It was a very good year.
Yeah.
But now we are expecting this rain and big winds. And so I have a tent that I live in part-time, first time in my life. And so I have to deal with the elements in
ways
that
that's our extra room, by the way.
Right. I was desperate to have some space for myself.
Because we live in a one-room cabin. And in the middle of these woods. And in fact, these trees are a canopy over our cabin, which is kind of scary, Errol, to tell you the truth, because I think that's the thing that's scaring me the most about this rain coming, because it's not, they're talking about these winds of 50, 60 miles an hour, and they say expect trees to fall down because the ground is wet from last week's rain, and the wind can,
uproot the trees.
Uproot the trees. And here we are living with all these trees. So I'm a little nervous. So if you don't hear from me next week.
Or you want to be sure and tune in next week and find out.
Did
they survive in the tree? Well, we have an absolutely fabulous ceiling. It's the best ceiling I've ever lived under. I'd have to say it's number tops. And you're probably wondering why. Because, A, it is real wood moving across on these three great beams, and the ceiling, the wood is curved. So we live in like a semicircle.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at it now, and of course, each plank of wood has its own distinctive pattern. So it never gets tired. It's not like most ceilings.
No, the wood doesn't get tired. We don't get tired of looking at it.
That's right. That's right. I knew that. So I feel good about this. And this house was built in 1940, I think we recently found out.
Amazing, huh?
It is amazing. So what's on my mind this week then is catching myself in these stupidities, I'll just call them.
Yeah, but you're judging them. Perhaps it's just, you know, what I like is that if I do things that I have judged in the past and could judge right now and just look at them as like, oh, I'm doing that. And I am aware that it doesn't work for me. It doesn't feed me. It doesn't nourish me in any way. It's just old habits and old patterns, things that I grew up with, heard my neighbors say things like that, so I say them. And just to realize that, okay, that's, I'm just repeating it, but I don't have to continue to do this.
I love that. How would you grade yourself on your ability to do that when those things come up for you, being real?
Well, I grade things in terms of the time that, from the time that I curse myself to the time that I forgive myself. And that time is getting shorter.
And that's significant.
That's very significant. Yeah, that's, so I will have a knee-jerk reaction and go, oh, God, what a stupid thing, blah, 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 and really judge myself to pieces and then look at myself, judging myself, and start laughing about it. And then it's gone.
I remember once there was someone who worked with us, and she said to us, do you guys ever stop processing? In other words,
no.
No. And it may not interest you, listener out there, to hear these two woulda, wanna, coulda, shoulda, were therapists on themselves. I mean, why are you looking at me? That Rochelle just gave me a look of consternation. I wish I could send you a text picture of Rochelle consternating. And she goes in that other room, and she could consternate for long periods of time.
God, Errol.
What?
You're bad. You're really bad. Okay. I guess what it is that I don't expect anybody to think or do anything, but I personally like the word why. And I won't settle for anything unless I've really given it a good why over.
Is it a why over or a why over?
A why over.
Yeah, a good why over. I love that image. That is great. We're going to have a good why over. Okay, we're taking off, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be riding at a why over altitude of expanded perception multiplied by some kind of sub infinity in the range of north by northwest, not allowing for the why over to escape our notice.
In fact, Errol, remember I said to you the other week, I think that that is what creates wisdom, is the that you become wise because you ask why a lot.
That's right. Wise. Right. Wise. Why? Wise?
Wise. You wise. Become wise.
Wise, yes. We're laughing because of the breath sound that comes before the WH, because just the other night I was remembering when I was in college, having grown up in Missouri, I said why and what and always lead with the heart sound. And as a speech major and actor, I had to relearn to say what, why, when, and go, what? I do. I remember walking around the campus trying to so train myself that I would go, where will we be? What time is it? Who are you? Oh, that's the way you're supposed to say that.
That's very funny. I don't remember what I did when I was learning those things, but it sounds very familiar somehow.
So, but let's stop and can I take you all back, listeners, to like 1963, just for a minute?
There may be some people out there that weren't even born in 1963.
And if you've already died, those of you who've already passed, but were there in 63, listen up.
Oh.
Because it was a profound year. I may have shared this on this show before, but it's worth repeating because it's a preview, like a trailer of the experiences that I had in that led to me being thrown out of college. You see, the week John F. Kennedy was assassinated, my girlfriend told me that she was pregnant with my baby, and I was thrown out of two colleges, one of which was a co-ed university, and the other was a woman's college. Now, if you imagine that line coming over the movie with a shot of the University of Missouri campus, okay, and that's the line, and something happens, and then, like in some movies, we'll go 6 months before, and we'll backtrack, and we'll tell this amazing story on this show, which is called, tell me again.
Inside Out.
The Naked Truth.
Mm-hmm.
And we're sponsored by Go Raw. So Go Raw, come with us. And 1963, I want you to take a minute and be thinking about 1963. And we're just going to follow our other theme tonight and listen to a song. Speaking of wind.
All we are is dust in the wind.
What do you think the name of that song was?
Dust in the Wind.
Very perceptive.
But it isn't.
That's funny you should say that. Actually, it is. It's by a group called Kansas.
Oh, how interesting that you.
Right,
Kansas
there I was.
City. Oh, Missouri. What came to me when I was listening to that song was the sense of that we're ephemeral, you know, that we are like that. And we want to make ourselves more substantive all the time. And I think that's what the ego does. You know, it gives us substance in our mind anyway, where without that, we're ephemeral. But we are.
Here's my hit off of it. Just what you said about the ego. There is this impulse within us that I watch, and I watch it express itself in numerous addictions. And that is this impulse to more. More, more, more of this, more of that, more of this, more of that. And the ego's way of dealing with and giving expression to that impulse of more, 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 more is to gather, get, acquire, hold on to. It's very much grabbing, holding on to more, more, more addiction over and over and over and over. Of course, you can never get enough. And the spirit's way, which is, I believe, what places that impulse within us in the first place, that is actually spirit, expressing what spirit inevitably would do, which is to express more and more and more and more, which is what love is. Love is that outgrowth of that spirit, which is that fundamental existential level of reality. And then it bursts out of that with love, this phenomenon that overtakes the entire panorama of all existence. Oh my, oh my, oh my. And let me just wrap this up. I know. And so the more impulse within us is to expand. And this is where I was headed with this. The ego's way of expanding is you expand by puffing yourself up with nothing and fear. The love's way of helping you to expand is to fill yourself up with love and let love expand you out more and more and more. And that is, and therein is the fulfillment.
He said.
Circa 2014.
Now she says. I think that, you know, when our children were little, remember we would play with them. And we would do something like you'd grab one arm and I'd grab one arm and we would swing them. You know, that we would be the swing.
We would do it with their ears. Remember, you grab one ear and I'd grab the other
ear. Never did that ever, ever. No. But when we put them down, the response was always the same, more. But it was pleasure that they were asking for more for.
Of course.
Right. And I think that, and that's like the early stages of evolution. It's not like more is something of the ego so much as it is like, on the evolutionary scale, in the beginning, we want more pleasure. We want more. It's very sensory. We're a sensory being.
Pleasure, security, control. Let's try those two on it.
That's not when we were little.
Oh, you mean as a child?
Yeah, as a child. Okay. And so we want more of that, which makes us feel good on a very sensory level. You know, and I think what happens is we evolve. We want more of spiritual level. We want more of that feels so quiet and calm and makes us feel connected to things, makes us feel big in the sense that big like the universe is big, that we're one with the universe. When we crave more of that, more of peace, more of joy, that's part of a higher level of evolution. And I think that the ego is always something to me that defines itself. It has to define itself, either good, bad, or indifferent, but it's always a definition. And if I find no definition to myself, that's how I know when I'm in a state of love.
that reminds me of a song from the Fantastics, where she sings this song early in the show, somewhere near her line, "Oh God, don't let me be normal."
Oh.
And she has this song about expanding out. I don't remember, but it's worth getting the album and listening to it. It's a charming play.
Who was in the original cast?
Rita Gardner.
And who was the young man?
I think, wasn't it? I don't know who the young man was, but I did a show with Rita Gardner. It was Miami Coconut Grove Playhouse, and she came out to do The Unsinkable Molly Brown.
Uh-huh.
And I was in the chorus,
mm-hmm,
as a dancer at the Coconut Grove Playhouse. And I especially remember that show because we had to do this tap dance. We played like these 19th century cops who had to do a scene changer where they're changing the scene. So you bring four cops out to do a tap dance in front of the curtain. But I didn't really know how to tap dance. You know, I knew a basic couple of steps. And the other three guys who had come from New York and I was there in Miami, they really knew how to tap dance. I never worked so hard. Every break, every night, I slept tap dancing. I practiced those steps. I was determined to tap those dance. And
did you?
I think I did. You know, I've had those kinds of experiences many times in my life where I've had to rise to an occasion. Like, I remember I directed this show and we toured it and we couldn't take the great band we had. This was in Aspen and I had directed Stop the World, and we had the Aspen Music Festival, and we had our pick of musicians that accompanied our show every night. But we went on tour, and we had to go to Grand Junction and do the show, and only the music director who played the piano was going to be there. And I made I don't know if it's a mistake, but it was definitely something. I said to him, "Well, I played the bongos in high school." Keep in mind, I was the director. He says, "Good, you're the drummer." So I said, "You got to do we got to have some percussion." So he got me with a jazz musician, three nights, working day and night, working like the same thing with the tap dance, you know, going over the entire score of a musical. And you know, when you're a drummer, like one hand does one thing and the other hand does something else, and then you got your feet doing stuff. But I approached it as a dancer. I thought, okay, I can do this. This is just a dance. The feet are just doing these things, and hands are doing these things. And you can do this, boy.
And you did.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yes, I don't remember screwing up. And that's another story. I'll stop at this point. But I remember my worst, absolute worst screw-up on stage ever. And it was a doozy.
You can't just say that and stop.
All right. I was doing Brigadoon in North Carolina in Summerstock. And there's this song, there's this dance they do, which is like a sword dance. And I love this dance. You're in the kilts, you're wearing this outfit, the music's going vroom, 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 vroom. And we walk downstage with the sword and the scabbard, and there's three of us abreast, and we put the needle down in a very grand way in our kilts and our sperm. And we're about to do the Highland dance there. And put the sword down, and you make a cross. And the whole thing about the dance is, if you imagine a cross on the floor and there's four squares, you dance amongst those four squares. And you do it at a medium speed, and then you do it really fast.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the whole dance. And I loved that dance. And all week long, I was just really cooking with it. And I put my swords down. We got up. We were about to start the dance, and I choked.
Oh, dear.
I choked. I could still feel it. I kicked the scabbard, and it became parallel with the sword.
Oh, my God. Oh, there goes four boxes.
Right. There went the four boxes. Like, now, keep in mind, the music is going. The other guys are dancing. They didn't stop and go, wait a minute. You know, this is happening, like, instantly. I'm on stage, and I had to make an instant decision. Do I just keep dancing and imagine the boxes? Or do I do what I chose to do, which was bend down and straighten them. The other two guys are dancing. So here's this long, here's Captain Klutz.
Klutz man
showing off at an early age what he was capable of. And when I, and then I tried to anticipate where they were in the dance as I rose up to begin, and I anticipated wrong.
Oh no.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
now,
no.
Now it's like the humiliation level is like DEPCOM 4.
Oh, you poor guy.
And then it didn't get any better. And I remember when the number was over, I was horrified for many reasons. One, I loved the dance. I loved the feeling of the dance. And it was a horrible, obvious mistake to any one of the 700 people in the audience that night. And if you need to be approved of and liked, like many of us performers, it was not a pretty picture. We shouldn't leave the subject of rain. I mean, we're about to have the rain, and I just hope I can have this wonderful attitude about it.
See you tomorrow.
Good night, darling. Take care of that throat. You're a big singing star now, remember? This California dew was just a little heavier than usual tonight.
Really? From where I stand, the sun is shining all over the place. I'm singing in the rain, just singing in the rain. What a glorious feel, and I'm happy again. I'm laughing at clouds so dark up above. The sun's in my heart, and I'm ready for love. Let the stormy clouds chase everyone from the place. Come on with the rain, I've a smile on my face. I walk down the lane with a happy refrain, just singing, singing in the rain.
You just see him dancing, can't you?
Okay, everybody up, on your feet, all you listeners. Yeah, that.
I'm happy again. I'm singing and dancing in the rain.
The umbrella is twirling, his feet are tapping, the water is fountaining. Because you can't see it right now, but Errol is dancing.
Thank you.
Oh, you can really, I can see it. I can see the picture. And yes, the New Year's party that they're having here at Lupin, did you see the advertisement for it?
No.
It's called
yes.
Under the Rainbow and Singing in the Rain.
Oh.
So it has the picture of Gene Kelly and, what's her name, Debbie Reynolds. And yesterday I was showing some property to three young men. They were all like 24, 25 years old. And they saw that picture. And one of them said, oh, I saw that movie. That was cool. I thought that was fun.
he was my hero.
Gene Kelly?
He and Teilhard de Chardin.
No, really. They danced together.
They were, you know, they had something. It was the French thing. It was American in Paris. He was like Teilhard. Oh, I knew I was going to say this earlier. The quest is for something that's substance. And this is what Teilhard, what a great lead in. This is what Teilhard says about it, which I have determined for myself is what substance is. Should I do it in the French or the English?
Oh, please do it in the English. We don't understand French.
Okay. first I'll do it in English, and then I will do it in French. He says, nothing is precious save what is yourself in others and others in yourself.
Say it again.
I'm going to say it again, but in French. Nothing is precious save what is yourself in others and others in yourself.
Marvelous. I could almost understand every word. So what does that mean, really? How do you translate that? Nothing is precious save what is in yourself and what you swear.
And others in yourself. If you imagine the places when we overlap.
When do we overlap? Sounds sexual.
It is sexual. It's decidedly sexual. It's the most fundamental aspect of what sexuality is. It's that commingling. It's that interpenetration. Remember that line we talked about is from the Urantia book. It says, you can have the mind that was in Christ Jesus by the same technique by which you accept another person's idea as your own. In other words, if you tell me something, and especially if I have not agreed with it or been inclined to accept it before this moment, and then I like take it in and take it on, and I assume that perspective and include it in me. We have overlapped in that sense. And where that overlapping took place, where that idea, meaning, phenomenon crossed over into this other persona over here and was engaged, and it was like my mouth eating something. So this was my soul eating of this phenomenon.
And it's such a good experience for you that I don't want to take anything away, but I don't agree with you.
Ooh, wow. You don't agree with me. Let's go.
I don't agree with you in this sense. When you said you take that person's idea, it's like, I think it's more that you are, that person has an idea, and that becomes precious as your idea is precious. Not that, because the fact that there are people who have ideas that I really find detrimental to my health and the well-being of other people. And so I don't, but when I see that person for having an idea and I, in a way, not cherish, but honor the fact that they can have an idea, as I can have an idea, and we may not have the same idea. And because I find that they can have that idea and hold them with that idea, that's what I think of. I don't think it's the idea that intermingles. It's the person who has the idea that I'm intermingling with.
I hear you. So what you're saying is it's not the idea, it's you honor the person who's having the idea.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let me see if I can look at it from a slightly different angle, because I think this would illuminate what I mean. I didn't really mean to get into the idea acceptance thing as the main thing. That was just a slight metaphor. The essence of what I'm trying to communicate is the way we interpenetrate, the way we are mutually expanded by virtue of our interaction with each other. We've allowed each other to expand us to the degree that I've embraced you. I may not embrace your ideas, and this is the spiritual trick, I believe. I embrace you and allow you to impact me, to impress me. I receive you, and whatever my soul can connect with and relate to, it kind of grabs onto it. I think of it kind of like DNA, if you've ever studied that. The way the each individual, but these little base chains that form the chromosome structure, you know, they kind of piece up to each other, and that's what forms a new being.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that actually, to me, is the best metaphor for how the thing works, and it is how the thing works, which is why it's such a great metaphor. DNA.
Wow, the metaphor itself is the metaphor of the metaphor.
It's the thing, and it's the metaphor for the thing, and it's the metaphor for if the thing went out to become metaphors for other people. Metaphors.
We're having a metaphor.
Right, it's exactly right. It's a metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, metaphor what? I'll tell you.
Metaphor what?
It's like a metaphysical. Metaphysical. I mean, the whole notion of metaphysical is that which...
Isn't it beyond physical?
Yeah, it's beyond physical. And that's...
So a metaphor is beyond four. Could be five or six.
Okay. I see we've kind of devolved into...
This is not devolving because you have a chance right now to practice what you were talking about. You can just include me.
Why would I want to do that?
See?
Practice. That's why I stopped preaching. Because I don't want to practice what I preach. Damn. It's too hard. So I
and
just stopped
it.
Preaching.
And that's that it. It's it.
So we are Insight Out. If you want to call in, we'd love to hear from you. You can join us right now. 888-627-6008.
I want to say one thing.
Only
if
one
you're
thing.
Listening, Bruce, if you're listening to this broadcast tonight, Bruce, I'm just so happy to be talking to you. So know that I am talking to you tonight, Bruce, there in Brooklyn, New York. And I love that you listen to this show. So, of course, tonight you won't be listening to the show, but I hope you are. Anyway.
Yeah.
That's
Hi, Bruce.
All I
Bruce was
say.
The pharmacist, wasn't he? He went,
Bruce,
with Tilda Goldberg.
I've known Bruce since I'm, 18, maybe 18 years old, I guess. He wrote a play and directed it, and I did it at Brooklyn College in the acting department. And we've been friends ever since. That's a long time.
You just reminded me of another thing that happened around the time of 1963. I met my friend Don H., who lives in Boulder, and he was with me. He was also a part of the dance, student dancers at the Women's College, which is why we were there. And when I was going through this whole thing with the pregnancy of my girlfriend and being thrown out of college and my whole life was upheavaled, we became really good friends, and we've remained really good friends for 50 years. He's my son's godfather. He's the one guy that I feel like, of all the people I've ever known, has really been on this journey of wakefulness in a very consistent, conscious, ongoing way. So Don was quite an important person in my life.
Oh, that's nice.
Is that nice?
Well, it's nice that we have important people in our lives, people that have been
nice.
Important to us, and that they're still here because a lot of them are no longer here.
It's true. It is nice. I like to just stop for a minute and think about other nice things. There's like
No, I want to talk more about rain because it's a very interesting thing. You know, like
rain.
We think of sunshine, you know, sunshiny days and things are nice and we all feel good. And then the rain comes, and I think that the test with rain or snow or anything that seems like inclement weather is to find that as wonderful as the sun. You know, they're like, wow, this is really neat. You know, wow, this is neat. And children will find that that way. Children will run. I mean, I remember as a child running out and playing in the rain and playing in puddles, and except I didn't like worms, and there were worms in the puddles. That was a little scary when I was a child.
Well, so how about you out there? Have you seen the rain? Because we're about to see it. Creedence Clearwater.
Oh,
thank you for that. Have you ever seen the rain?
Well, I just recently, a friend took these quotes, and look at this. This is so fun. Do not be angry with me, rain. Oh, do not be angry with the rain. It simply does not know how to fall upwards. Vladimir Nabokov.
Really?
It does not know how to fall upwards. And Charlie Chaplin said, I always like walking in the rain so no one can see me crying. Mm. Not sweet. And then this one, some people walk in the rain, others just get wet. Mm. I like that, huh? And these are so sweet. Pablo Neruda wrote, at night, I dream that you and I are two plants that grew together, roots entwined. This is a lot to do with what you said before. And that you know the earth and the rain like my mouth, since we are made of earth and rain. That's a lot in keeping with what you were talking about becoming, you know, and that at one moment that we crave.
You mean, so not only is the earth and rain, there's a fire and rain.
Oh, wow.
Just yesterday morning, they let me know you were gone. Suzanne, the plans they made put an end to you. I walked out this morning and I wrote down this song. I just can't remember who to send it to. I've seen fire and I've seen rain. I seen sunny days that I thought would never end. I've seen lonely times when I could not find a friend. But I always thought that I'd see you again. Won't you look down upon me, Jesus? You gotta help me make a stand. Just got to see me through another day. My body's aching and my time is at hand. I won't make it any other way. Oh, I've seen fire and I've seen rain. I've seen sunny days that I thought would never end.
Love that song.
I've seen lonely times when I could not find a friend. But I always thought that I'd see you again.
Thank you, James Taylor, for that reminder. I hope you've enjoyed our time with you as much as we've enjoyed it with us. We are the Covenant Players, bringing to you the good word from here in our woods, where we have the additional luxury of not only carrying the good word, but carrying the good word naked. Because we live in a clothing optional community, and I allowed myself to go naked today. I just went out there and I thought, you know, cold winter tend not to be naked outside very much here. It's a little nippy, but I didn't care. 50, 60 degrees, and there's just something about letting all of your skin have access to the atmosphere.
All your skin have access to the atmosphere. I love that. That's a great line.
Anything else you want to say? Besides the fact that we're so grateful, thank you for Go Raw for letting us be able to have these conversations and share with the people we love and care about, and hopefully there are a bunch of you out there.
Yes. Well, let me say something. Remember. No, don't remember.
Don't remember.
Yeah. Remember something. But
wait.
He'll put up his hand to
just
stop
come,
me.
Come join us. Before we have you remember, I'm going to remind you, which is like remembering, to go to our website, thelaughingheart.org, and check out our videos and send me a note, eastrider@gmail.com. And we'll get back to you. And we'll be back next week at the same time on the
let
same.
Let you know what happened after all this rain.
Right. And in the meantime, you can you can do what Rochelle wants you to remember. And what was that, Rochelle?
Resistance is what you add to pain to make it last longer and hurt more.
And so be it. Good night.